We're taping Micha. Today is February 19th, and we're starting Dvar Hashem Asher Haya El Micha Hamorashti. As the Targum reads, Micha Mi Maresha, a place called Maresha. As Rashi says, Meir Maresha. Right? Now, some say the name of the city was Moreshet. Right? In fact, he uses this word later on in his perek. Titni shiluchim al moreshet. Alright. Whatever it is, Micha, the person from Moreshet or Moresha.
Yes. Question on the general book. I know you said this isn't the same Micha as in Malachimbet, so how do we know that?
This Micha is well after that guy. He's a contemporary of Yeshayahu. Because the first pasuk, it says, Bimei Yosam Ochozi Chizkiyah Melech Malchi Yehuda. Right? That puts him way further than a student of Eliyahu. Just someone who lived, who knew Eliyahu. Okay. Yotam's father was Uziyahu. And Uziyahu is just three kings removed from that time period. Even if Micha at this time was 70, 80 years old, still probably couldn't be the same, living at the same time. I know there's something in Chazal called the conservation of names, where, you know, when two people have the same name, you know, just make it convenient to say that they're both the same person, but that's not really what's going on here. Okay, what Ibn Ezra points out is Zehanavi Hayonizkar B'Sefer Yirmiyahu. He's not the guy mentioned in Sefer Melachim, he's the guy mentioned in Sefer Yirmiyahu. Unuvuaso al kol Yisrael. Okay. His nevuah was not only on Yehuda. His nevuah was on the 10 tribes also. Okay, that's what Ibn Ezra says. But when he says during the reign of Yosam, Achaz, and Chizkiyahu, those are Yehuda kings. But we'll see that some of his messages are indeed for the northern tribes as well. Okay. It says, because it says, look at the first pasuk. It says, Asher Chozo al Shomron v'Yerushalayim. He tells you himself. This stands in contrast with Amos, who spoke only against the north, and Yeshayahu, who spoke only against the, about the south. Right? And Micha gets into both. Shimu amin kula. Okay, let's get in. Shimu amin kula. So he starts off by saying, I have a message for the nations of the world. Right? Because some upheaval is about to happen that has ramifications for the whole world. Until now, there really hasn't been any significant ruling nation that really conquered everything. Egypt was very powerful in this time, but there were Hittites, there were Babylonians, there were Sumerians, there were others who had their power in their day. But one nation is about to change all that. That's Assyria. Okay? So he's saying, listen, nations, there's something happening that's not only concerning my people. So what Assyria is for Micha is what Babylonia is for Yirmiyahu. Got it? Because Babylonia is about to do the same thing to many nations. And Yirmiyahu says so. The 12 nations, you're going to drink the cup of poison that Babylonians are going to pass around the world. Right? So that's why he says, Hakshivu Shimu Amim Kula. It's going to be like a world war. Hakshivi Eretz Umloa. It's parallel, right? Hakshivi to Shimu. Why does he change from Shimu, which is plural, to Hakshivi, which is singular and feminine? Eretz is a feminine word. And it's singular. Amim is plural and masculine. Fine. Hakshivi Eretz Umloa. Vihi Hashem Elokim Bechem Le'ed Hashem Mehechal Kosho. Why do we have something like this? We have Hashem's name. We see it. This is not a Haftorah, but if it were, we would read it Hashem Elokim. The second word is Elokim. I mean, there are two anomalies here. One is that a four-letter word that starts with a yud and a hey is pronounced Elokim. That's how you pronounce it. This phenomenon happens in the Torah too. All right? Okay, don't be so amazed. The phenomenon itself of yud and a k, a hey and a vav and a hey pronounced Adonai is in itself anomalous. What's with that? Why can't we just pronounce it the way it is? Right? Okay, it's complicated, but it's really a function of the following. While all the other words that denote God can denote other things, like midos, el rachum, chanun, shalom, right? A person can also be called ish shalom or chanun rachum, right? You with me? Elohim, when defining God, is Elohim, because Elohim defines other gods too, or even possibly a judge. Right? Ad ha-Elohim yavod dar-shnehem, this past week's parsha. Asher Yoshu and Elohim. Atoti Elo le-Elohim, Hashem tells Moshe about Paro. Right? So, and El, lo yelacha, El acher. Right? Even Shin Dalad Yud means the one who said die. But Yud Kei Vav Kei only defines God. Right? That we know. Right? So why can't we pronounce it the way it's spelled? So again, it's complicated. You have to know a Gemara at the end of the fourth parak in Psachim. You have to know a Gemara in Daf Yud Ches and Maseches Avodah Zarah. The first page in Parak Chelik and Sanhedrin. All these Gemaras that talk about this phenomenon. But I'll just simplify it very, very quickly. Can anyone come across it? God is hidden. He's mysterious. We don't even want you to pronounce his name. This is his name. Every other name can be something else also. But this is his proper name.
Rabbi, Yud Kei Vav Kei has so many different, like sometimes, like, you look at like, Yud Kei Vav Kei, like, the name, and, like, there'll be different, like, nekudot underneath. Like this one over here, for example.
So that's because when it's nekudot like this, it's Elohim. Otherwise, it's just...
When it's just, when it's a segol...
Never anything but
that. It's a segol, or what's it called, and... Okay.
That's it. Okay, so... So it's what really what this is, that God chooses to walk in the darkness in a mysterious way. Even his name is to be avoided and to be considered a mystery to you. Okay? We don't know exactly what the vocalization is. You have a sense that it's like, you know, the witnesses to pronounce it with a yud that way, yud, right? But it's not even that either. Yes.
I mean, you just said that this is like the name of God, and like that's just what it refers to, but don't we often say that it also refers to higher over the...
That's exactly what it is. Because God's essence is a combination of time. It's after yesterday, it's before tomorrow. Sorry, it's after... He is simultaneously before yesterday, after tomorrow, and it's all in the moment. His name is a combination of the tenses, precisely so.
But that
in a way that's also quite mysterious to us.
But that would mean we refer to that name as something other than just him.
Yes. So it is. Right. Time can apply to other things also, but not the infinite nature of time. Otherwise, we have to ask the question, what was before Bereishis? What was before God? God just have a... Okay, here's the color point. Okay, now God... What was before that? Okay, all right, now start here. Well, what was before that? Start here. So you might want to ask, why did we choose to define the nature of God in his name with time and not space? Because you could do the same thing with space. Right? With the end of the universe. Okay, here. Oh, what about what's out there? Oh, okay, we'll extend it more. That's what infinite means. But infinite defines space as well as time. Right? Okay. There's Kedushas Hazman and there's Kedushas Hamakom. Apparently, Kedushas Hazman is bigger. How do I know? Because we don't build the Beis Hamikdash on Shabbos. You get it? That's why we don't build the Beis Hamikdash on Shabbos. Kedushas Hazman is sanctified with wine. Kedushas Hamakom is sanctified with oil. Wine is higher than oil. I can give you other Kabbalistic explanations to this, but yes, it's time. It's a worthwhile discussion. But alright, this is not necessarily unique to Micha, of course. But just an interesting how in one pasuk he refers three times to God's name, and not one of them is the traditional Yud Kei Vav Kei pronounced Aleph Dal Nun Yud. Right. So he talks immediately in his book about God emerging from his holy abode, time and space. Because Micha is the first one to announce that holy space will be destroyed. He's going to build up to it in chapter 3. Right? Okay, now we're getting to that sort of an anthropomorphism, where Pasuk Gimel says, Ki hine Hashem yotze mim komo v'yarad v'derach al b'masei aretz. God is going to leave his place, he's going to come down to this world and trample upon the high places of the world. What does this mean? An earthquake? Take a look at the Targum with me, will you, please? Look what it said. Read me the Targum of mim komo. Targum is very famous for this. You see, ki hinei Hashem yotze mim komo. Arei ho Hashem mitgilei me'asar beis shchintei. Sound familiar?
Yeah,
Uvel Tzion. From Uvel Tzion, right?
Yeah,
same. Baruch Kibbol Hashem mim komo. Same word, right? In other words, what's God's makom? There's no makom for God. Baruch Kibbol Hashem mim komo. He's not malach laretz kibodav. He exudes. He goes past the place, right? Which is why Rashi says, Yotze mim komo, look what Rashi writes. Mikisei harachamim, lekisei hadin. What made Rashi say that? Because you see in the last pasuk you have Yud Kei Vav Kei? That's usually a denotation of God the Merciful. But how do we pronounce it? How do we pronounce that Hashem's name in pasuk base? Yud Kei Vav Kei. Elokim. You get it? Mikisei Arachamim. Elokim is obviously din because it describes the dayan. Describes the judge. Mikisei Arachamim, Lekisei Hadin. Okay? Medorech al Bamasei Oretz. And he will trample. Now, in other places in Tanakh, when God tramples on something, it causes an earthquake. Zechariah, chapter 13, describes an earthquake caused by God. Now we know what causes an earthquake. It's tectonic plates beneath the Earth's surface that rub against each other and it causes things to move up out of here. But as far as the prophets were concerned, what causes that is God doing something, physical, if you will. Right. Okay. So, in other words, God is coming out to do something significant. This is so far. When we did Yoel, whose time period you could not determine with a degree of certainty, it doesn't tell us. Ovadia. We put late. We thought he's his contemporary Yirmiyahu. We did Yonah. We know it's very early. This Micha is a contemporary of Yishayahu, and for the last 100 years, we really haven't had too many oracles from God. The last person to talk to us was Elisha. Yahu Elisha, right? Okay.
So could this be like a connected because?
Yeah, okay. But one thing is the very least is that what I'm saying here is that prophets have not been speaking for quite a time about what God is going to be doing. Look, I think I told you earlier in the semester that in the generation of Micha, again, four prophets, Hosea, Yeshayahu, Amos, and Micha. Before these four prophets, tell me some names of Nabi.
Shmuel,
God, Nassan, Achiah, Shiloni, Eliyahu, Elisha. When did these prophets usually come on the scene to talk to the king? not usually stand on a crate to speak to the masses and tell them, I don't like the state of the morality of Israel right now. They would talk to the kings, and that would be it. They'll address the kings and tell them what they should be doing, and they'll address the people. But for now, the first time the prophets are speaking about to the masses, precisely because there's going to be more upheaval happening now because of the Assyrians than anything you've seen before.
They're
going out to the masses. And masuha horim These are things that would happen in an earthquake, right? The mountains will melt from under him, and the valleys will split. Simple description of an earthquake, right? Kadonag mipnei ha'esh, like wax melting before fire. Donag is wax. Kemayim mugarim bimorad, like water dripping down. Now, what's a morad? Right? What is morad? So what does morad look like to Shorish?
Yoreh.
What's interesting is that Targum, do you have the Targum before you? What's the last word in this pasuk for Targum?
Modron.
What did Targum do? Which is a common thing. There are about 100 words like this in the Torah. In the Tanakh. 100 words like this. Some are eminently obvious, like this. Keves and Kesev. Simula and Salma. Right? With me? In next week's special Torah reading for Parsha Zohar, we're going to read about Amalek that attacked the people in the back lines. Kol ha-necheshorim. No such word in the Tanakh. This is a hapaxagon. You know what that means?
It's only one time you see the entire Torah.
Yes. A word that only appears once in the entire Tanakh.
Wait, don't we have that?
The answer is, this word is a hapax. But you know what that actually means. It's not necheshorim, it's necheloshim. Now the word makes sense. What a necheloshim. The chalash, the weak ones, right? So that's where words in Hebrew you can change letters in order to make sense. I mean, there's some it's really obvious, right? There are some sukkim in Tehillim. Nigzarti me'eretz hachayim. I have been like cut off. The gozeri am sukkim ligzorim, right? In one pasuk in Tehillim it says nigrazti. Right? And you can say, alright, there's a printer's error. Someone mixed up the letters. No, in Hebrew you can do this. It's some type of poetic license to mix up, to change letters like this. And I say there are about 100 such examples in the Old Tanakh. Right? So now you see, modron means modron means a downward spiral, a downward direction. And can you think of from this morad, how about this word? What does that mean? Darom.
South.
And you see why? Because it's yored. But just switching the letters around. Right? Okay, that's just simple enough. Okay. Remember we did in Yonah when he kept going by Yered, the Tocha Aliyah, by Yered, and again the third time. And then and all of a sudden it changes the word Yorat Aniyah to Sfina. He's going Safun. He's hiding himself further and further and trying to descend further into the abyss to hide himself from God. And then when it describes how he falls asleep, it uses the word Vayero Adam to give you further a description of this. That's what's happening here. You're going further into the abyss of immorality and hiding yourself further and further from the presence of God. Befesha Yaakov. Pasuke, Befesha Yaakov, Kol Zos V'Chatos Beis Yisrael, Mi Fesha Yaakov, halo Shomron, umi Bamos Yehuda, halo Yerushalayim. Very, very beautiful prose, no? Right? He says, Pesha means a rebellion. He's just referring to the northern tribes, that's Yisrael and Shomron. The southern tribes are Yehuda and Yerushalayim. Shomron is the capital city of the northern tribes. We refer to it as an area, maybe called Yehuda and Shomron today. All right? It's simply named because the man who built it was named Shemer. Right? In the Tanakh, it has usually a very bad negative connotation. It's the capital of the northern tribes. The northern tribes are usually bad. Right? Okay. So he bunches Yerushalayim together with Shomron, right? Shortly before Micha, there was a singular attempt to unite those two kingdoms by having the son of Yehuda king marry the daughter of Northern Tribes king and produce the girl, which was devastating. Devastating. That girl, her name was Atalia, somehow got the power to ascend the throne.
And almost killed off the entire Beit Yehuda.
Killed off the entire Beit Yehuda. Only one child survived. That story we just read this past Shabbos, right? Parsha Shkolim. His boy's name was Yoash. He was 1 year old. It took 6 years for them to finally get the strength to kill this witch. After which she almost killed off every child, every male descendant of David, so she could rule over both kingdoms. So it was probably just not a good idea to try to do this again. Right? Okay, so Micha is speaking about the evil of both kingdoms. Right? Okay. Yes, now we have a minute. Samti Shomron Le'i Hasodeh L'matzo'ei Kerem V'igarti L'gaya V'neha V'sodeha Agaleh. I will make Shomron to be like the E Hasodeh. This guy has a way with words. Maze E. No, that's with an Aleph. An E is a heap. He will use the word again in this book, describing Yerushalayim. An E Hasodeh means a place of desolation. Now, when he describes it as a Sodeh, you can have an E in the town also, but he means that Shomron will be like a sodeh. If you turn to with me just quickly to Perek Gimel. Pasuk Yud Bet. He says, Lochein biglalchem tzion sodeh techoresh. Yerushalayim iyin tihye. You see it? Sodeh, iyin, iyin. V'harabayis lebamos yo'ar. And the Temple Mount will be like a desolate forest. Okay? So here he's using it, says, Shomron will be like a heap in the field. L'matoei kerem. Matoei kerem means a plowed kerem. Matoei kerem means a kerem ready for planting. When you are ready for planting, it means it's all uprooted. It's all the plant. Everything is, you know, there's nothing there yet. It's not even planted yet. It's just ready for planting. Vihigarti lagai, higarti lagai avaneha visodeha agale. Right? Higarti, you have that word already before where it says mugarim bimorad. Mugarim, I'll take it down in a downward spiral. Agai is a valley. I'll strip you, I'll cast you down into the valley. Right? And I will reveal your stones and your foundations. This is a metaphor. And I'll strip you bare of everything that you have. Yeshayahu, this man's contemporary, also speaks of stripping the people bare. Let me explain why. It might be the same message that Micha is using, only Yeshayahu makes it more clear. You know what a slug is, right? You know, a slug is like a fake coin. Right? So Yeshayahu describes these fake coins explicitly. He said they would take a coin made of bronze, copper, and overlay it with a thin layer of gold, and pass it off as a full gold coin. In Hebrew, that's called a sikh. Sikh, not too different than this, the word slug in English. Right? A sikh. And what they would also do is they'd fill their wine with water, water it down, and pass it off. It's more expensive. Right? They'd buy the half calorie Tropicana orange juice. Right? It's absurd. Don't ever buy that. Just buy the full calorie Tropicana and mix it with half water. That's what they're doing. Only they're charging you the same thing. Right? You could make Tropicana and have half the water. Half the calories. What?
Tropicana 50 is 50% less juice to get it in water.
Right, but you're paying the same thing. So do it yourself at home.
A little more if they want to make it like...
Yeah, maybe a little more acidic also. All right, let's go. So that's what they were doing. They were mixing their wine with water and covering their coins with gold. Covering their bronze coins with gold. So Yeshayahu says at the end of the chapter, I will reveal your phony outer trappings. Those are just symbols of what they are. They are a simple veneer on top, which I will strip away that veneer and everyone will see what a false nature you have. And I will show them that your wine is filled with fake stuff inside. It's not real. Right? You got it? So Micha might be saying the same, something similar here. Right? When he refers to, I will reveal your stones and your foundations I will uncover. In other words, what's beneath you, the stone, beneath the plaster or the color or the wallpaper, everyone will see under it that there's nothing there. The emperor has no clothes. Okay, got it? That's possible. V'chol psileha yukatu, v'chol esnaneha yisarfu ba'esh, v'chol atzaveha osim shmama, ki me'esnan zona ki batzak ad esnan zona yeshut. Wow, what a message. This is serious. First of all, these things refer to idols. Cut down your idols. That means that the Micha is addressing people who had idols in their homes. Could they have devolved into such a situation? Yes? Now, what's an esnanero? What's an esnan? It's a word in the Torah. What's esnan? Esnan is what you pay a zona for her services. It's called in the Torah, Esnan Zona.
It says here, Taha Vataha.
Okay, it's obviously something connected to Tava Saw is usually a word for Avodah Zara. Something you can talk like the word Ta'ut. Okay. Right.
Is he still addressing Avodah Zara in
Yeshu?
Or is he just...
No, he's addressing Yehuda and Shomron. Right? So all of your esnan will be burnt in fire. V'chol atzaveh asim shemamah, I will destroy, make desolation out of your atzavim. Ki me esnan zona ki batza, ve'ad esnan zona yeshuv. Whatever you have, you're collecting in order to pay for an esnan zona. Right? In other words, what are men doing? They're putting aside money so that they can afford the esnan. That's not zoning issue, but this is what you're coming back and forth to, in order to have enough money. Oh, I have enough money. Let me go to the zona. And he's describing to them what their foolishness is. Okay, alzos espida ve'elila. For this reason, I will give hesped. Hesped is eulogy. For this reason, I have to eulogize ve'elila. You ever heard on Tisha B'Av you say alalili? Alalili, there's a kina on Tisha B'Av. The last two words on every line is alalili. It's this word. Although the exact words alalili appears here in this book. You'll see it later. Okay, but it's the same word. Elila. Right? I think there's an English word to ululate. Right?
Yeah.
It means it's some kind of like
Really? Some sort of
Elcha Sholal V'Arom. Now, Arom here does not mean naked. I'm not saying that the prophet walked around naked. Right? When David ran away from Avshalom, it says that the people joined him, they fled Yerushalayim, and he was walking naked in their midst. Amrus? Is that possible?
No.
So what might Arom mean? What might you say Arom can mean in this
his inner essence revealed.
Mm. Without Shiva.
Without Shansis.
Without followers. Alone.
Barefoot. Okay. Naked on the feet. So, I'll say that there, sometimes even the English translations will be that. Okay. Well, it means that he's walking barefoot, maybe, you know, halfway up the feet. But, if your shoes, and when you say Shasoli Kol Sarki, when you put on your shoes, so when you have nothing on your feet, I know there's another word for barefoot in Tanakh, it's called Yachaf. Sound familiar?
Yachaf, yeah.
Yachaf. Right, so Arom, and the reason some people say Arom v'Yachaf. But if you're Arom, well, you have to say Yachaf also.
Yeah.
In the first place.
Okay, I can't go barefoot in my home, for example. My grandfather will kill me.
No, because it's a mourner walks that way.
Exactly.
Okay. So you see that he mentions Espedava Elila, you talk mourning in the Pasuk. To walk around totally naked is not the way of mourning, but to walk around barefoot is. Right? And it's just inconceivable that David went into exile naked. It's just inconceivable. Look, Shaul also, remember when Shaul first became a Navi, it says he stripped himself of his clothes and he started giving prophecy and people said, like, I'm Shaul ben Abiyam. You know, there too, I think it may just be he took off his shoes. Right?
I mean, what Moshe Rabbeinu had to take off his shoes in order to get the word from God? No. Granted, that was Har Sinai.
Yeah, so that the Mepharshim discuss what's the holiness of that place that requires removal of shoes, like at Har Abayis. Why the Kohanim take off their shoes. There's a lot of discussion of these things, but they'll be on this now. But let's just say that it means barefoot. Esem ispeid katanim ve'evel kivnos ya'ana. No reason to darshan too much on this. The benos ya'ana and tanim are wild animals that have a very piercing kind of cry that sounds like mourning. Some say it's hyena. Right?
Hanging out and piercing, right? It's yes, more of a cat. It has more of a giggle. Not a giggle type of laugh, but like.
Yeah, maybe. Well, usually that's how they pronounce tanim. Or jackal, maybe.
Yeah, jackal.
Jackal would be, yeah. Okay? So he's just. I think Ibnosiana could be an owl. An owl has a screech. Yeah. Not bad. Ki anusha makoseho. This is a little difficult because anusha is singular, makoseho is plural. It should be anushim makoseho, no? Alright, do what we can with this. Anusha makoseho. Right. Rashi says anusha means cholehi b'makoseho kimova ye'enash. Sound familiar? It's a very, very rare word in the Tanakh. Remember when David... I'm sorry, when after this, the Maisa with Bathsheba, David had a son who fell in love with his sister.
Tamar and Amnon.
So his friend, Yonadav, gave him advice of how to get her to take care of him. He says, to lie in bed and make like your Vayeh Enash. So Rashi uses that to determine that it means here. It means you're sick from all your beatings. The beatings made you sick.
Isn't Onish punishment?
It's a nine.
No.
Okay. It may be a pun. No, seriously. Maybe this is coming to you because it's an Onish. Prophets do that. Micha will do it often in this book. Right? Kibad Yehudon Noga Ad Shara Mi Ad Yushalayim. All of this sickness will come all the way up to Yushalayim. Okay, what's happening now is one of the most clearly defined list of puns in Tanakh. And I'm very happy that you mentioned the Anush and Anush, because it, especially in light of this Pasuk, and I just told you that Micha is going to do it, look what he does here. He goes, Begat al tagidu, Bacho al tivku, Beveit la'afra, Offer hit paloshti. Ivrilochem yoshevet shafir eria boshes. Lo yatsa yoshevet tzanon. Mispad beis ha'etzel yikach mi beis emnoso. He's going to move now into alliteration. But this is not an uncommon thing. I find it in Latin Treasor. Latin Treasor. Fanya says this word. Ekrom Theokir. Ekrom will be uprooted. Now, if you say that in English, it doesn't mean Ekrom will be uprooted. But in Hebrew, the word for uprooted looks just like the name of the city. Right? He could have said Ekrom Tishamein, Ekrom Tishamein. Right? There are 100 words you can use for describing the fall of Ekrom. But the prophet chooses to use the word. You get it? Okay? You look, Yeshayahu, for instance, says, God gave you a beautiful land, and he was hoping that you would promulgate Mishpat. And what have you done instead? Instead, you've done Mispach. It's clear what he's doing. He's trying to come up with another word that uses a lot of the same letters. And it's from a test, just move one letter to a ches. But it doesn't really fit so well. Mispach is a scam. God was hoping you would promulgate justice. And what have you gotten instead? Scams. What? If you said that in English, you'd say, that's crazy. What do scams have to do with justice? But in Hebrew, it's a very similar word. Now, can you fill in the blank? God was hoping you'd do tzedakah. What did you do instead?
Tzedakah.
Nothing but cries. I hear the cries of the poor. Right? You see what he did in both cases? He just exchanged one letter. In the same pasuk. Okay? So what Micha is doing here in these two psukim is something simple. You might not get it right away because it's, you know, there's a place called Afra. In Afra, you're going to be covered in dust. Now, come on, in English that sounds like such a simple word. Covered with dust? Yeah, but Afra is the name of a place. Right? Want to try it with it with some cities, you know. Right. Yeah, I mean, you have to have time to think it over, but you know. Okay. So that's what he's doing here in these psukim. Okay. It shows that he had some ingenuity. If he did this on the spot, it means he probably would have been a good improvisationist. You know what I'm saying? You ever see these improvisationists? They give them 10 different. Actually, I do this. I've done this a few times in my show because it was a Purim shtick I tried last year, and then I've done it a few times since. Is that 10 different people in the room say very random words, right? Even proper nouns or places, or and then I have 5 minutes to fit every one of those words into a credible Dvar Torah. Following? Now, I did it on Purim, which was very easy because I was able to actually write down the words and look at them. But I've done it on Shabbos, where I can't write the words down. I have to remember what the words are while trying to fit it into it. The way to do it is first have your credible Dvar Torah. Right? Have the Dvar Torah. And then build it into the Dvar Torah. But if you have to build it around the words, it's not going to work. You have to have your Dvar Torah and then work it through. Okay? This originally started where some years, they actually made a paper in the daily newspaper in the Tanya, where I was speaking at an orphanage that very much involved with the Tanya, and someone, I was speaking at like this bar mitzvah party for all the kids in this orphanage, and the whole town comes up, the mayor speaks, there's like 1,000 people, and I came to greet them, and someone said, if you say the word hippopotamus, right, in your speech, I'll give $2,000 extra to the orphanage. But it can't just be hippopotamus, ha! It has to be that it fits your speech, and it has to make sense. And no one can wonder, what did he say that for? Right? So the next year it became 2 words, then 3 words. So, but I managed to get hippopotamus in there. So I said that the head of the orphanage, his name is Yehuda Cohen. He loves the kids so much; he does everything for them. He would bear any burden. And this is in Hebrew, by the way. This is Hebrew. Kids don't speak English. is all he would bear any burden for you. He would travel any distance for you. He would even take a hippopotamus on his back and walk it across town just for your, every child in this orphanage. And, you know, a hippopotamus? Why not a rhinoceros? Why not an elephant?
Did that one?
And the newspaper got wind of it, and they actually wrote it up and said that. Anyway. So if Micha is able to do this, like on the spot, that means he's good in improv. Okay, he says Yosheves Boshes. You know, Boshes is part of the word Yosheves. Laafra Ofar. Okay, all right. In other words, he's saying all these places are going to be decrepit, uprooted, whatnot. Okay, in Hebrew, if the word sounds alike, you're not going to wonder, huh? If you translate to another language where, you know, the words don't make sense, I'm going to uproot Ekron. Really? Yeah, but Ekron Teokir already, you know, sounds a whole different ballgame. Ki chola, pasuk yibes. Ki chola letov yosheves maros, ki yorad ro me'es Hashem, l'sha'ar Yerushalayim. Resom amer kabol, l'rechesh yosheves lachish, v'yishis chatosi levas tzion, ki voch nimtzu pishe Yisrael. These two psukim have an abundance of rashis. Is there a reason why he picks on that word? On that letter? What does rash mean? What's rush? Rash, rush. Rush means impoverished. Kivsat ha-rush. But the la-rush ain't cold. Nasan Anabi says. Rush means someone who has nothing. Right? So, Yarad Ra, evil is falling down upon you from God, the Sha'ar Yerushalayim. You see, Sha'ar Shin Reish Yerushalayim, Reish Shin. Right? Larechesh Yosheves Lochish, Reishis Chatos. It's amazing. All these Reishes and Shins to give the implication of an impoverished people. People who will be driven to be impoverished. Now you see, in Perek Aleph Pasuk Tetvav, he mentions a place called Maresha. You see it? Right. And did you notice in his in these psukim he says Resom Hamerkava. Lo rechesh yosheves lochish reishis chatos. Reish and the shin is all over the place. He's bringing in the name of his city into these things. He's giving a hidden hint that his hometown Maresha is about to be destroyed. Okay. Lochein tidnishi luchima moreshes gas. You see the word moreshes there? But te achziv la achzov l'malchei Yisrael. Wow. Achziv.
Sound familiar?
Achziv
to levitzav beledes osam. Aminema. Achziv beledes osam.
When Tamar gave birth to her first two boys, Er and Onan, it says Yehuda was in Kziv when she gave birth to them. That explains why she named those two babies. It says Batikroshmo Er, Batikroshmo Onan. But the third boy was named by Yehuda, named him Sheva. Right? And, but what was the point? There was a place in Israel called Kziv, or in here it's Achziv. But what does this word mean? I just said it today. Mahalal. Kol Hadom Kozev, correct? Yeah. It means disappointment. A disappointment. Falsehood. Bar Kuziba. They changed his name to Bar Kuziba. You familiar with that? Bar Kokhba. They started to call him Bar Kuziba because he didn't come through with what they were hoping. Right? So the place called Achziv will be La'achzov. That's a good one.
That's practically all the same letters. You see it?
This place called Achziv will be a disappointment l'malchei Yisrael, for all the kings of Israel. As Rashi keeps pointing out, Lashon nofel al Lashon. Okay. Od hayoresh avi lach yosheves maresha adudulam yavo kivod Yisrael. Continuing with the puns. This whole sector, the end of Perek Aleph, starting Pasuk Yud. As I told you before, it's one of the most pronounced areas of puns in Tanakh. Right? Look, I know that we some of the Nevi'im were sensitive to rhyme. There's some great rhyme in Hosea and other places. In this coming week's Torah portion, Parshas Truma, a bit of an anomaly. Precisely. There's a pasuk in Parshas Truma where the Torah says, "I want you to do this kocha," and then it says afterwards, instead of saying the word osach, it says osacha. It's clearly good of it. It's osacha, not osach, because it wants to rhyme with kocha. Okay. Usually, don't think of the Torah in purposely writing in rhyme. But that pasuk seems to be an exception. Sorry, I'm not coming up with it in the moment. But it's in Parshas Truma. When you're landing at the Shabbos, keep an eye out for it. All right. Right. Now here's the problem. This pasuk is a little bit of a problem because we're not supposed to do these things. He says, pull out your hairs, make yourself a baldness, shave off your hair because of all these terrible things that are about to happen. So technically speaking, the Torah only forbids pulling out your hair, you finish mine over what?
Someone's death.
Over death, correct. Not over losing your full portfolio in your in the stock market, not over a ship that you had at sea capsizing. Technically speaking, the only prohibition the Torah has about pulling out your hair is over a dead. What's the lashon? Remember, lo tasimu korcha beinenechem lemeis. Right? So Micha is saying that obviously it was something that was done. The Torah doesn't have to prohibit things that are not. There's no such thing to warn us against such behavior, because it was a common thing to do when you lost a relative. Was to pull out your hair, right? So he's by telling us Korchi v'gozi, pull out your hair. Gozes means to shave. To gozes. Used for shearing the wool of sheep, right? He's just using the, flowery Hebrew, right? But when he says Korchi v'gozi al b'nei ta'anugayich, it might appear that he's telling them to rip their hair out over the loss of their children. Al b'nei ta'anugayich. You're beautiful children. You're only children, right? You're spoiled children, right? It may be
that he's being sarcastic. Can you see the sarcasm? You were so quick to be behaving like the goy. You're so quick to follow and bring into your homes the psilim like they have and the avodah zarah like they have. You with me? You're so quick to do these things. You know what? When it comes time to mourn, you'll probably mourn like they do, which is in violation of the Torah by pulling out your hair. But it can't be that the prophet is asking him to do this. By the way, Micha is not the only one who mentions this. Yirmiyahu also speaks about the people pulling out their hair. But he just says it's not something I'm telling you to do. It's something I'm predicting that you'll do because you people have begun to mourn like you do everything else, the way the Goyim did. Look, if you go to some movements within Judaism, you see their funerals, you wouldn't recognize them. You think it's a Christian funeral. They're singing, and the casket, that goes like a $20,000 casket, mahogany, beautiful, it goes on a roller, straight, in a winter wear, into a furnace. It was right in. More than 50% of the funerals are like that. Why? Because that's what the Goyim do, so that's what we do. Why should we pollute the land with more corpses and more? We're running out of space already.
Aren't we organic?
Humans break down. Okay, well, let's break down the way we're supposed to. You know, help of warmth, not with help of fire.
Okay. All right, so. Hoy choshvei avenu poalei ra al mishkavosam beora boker yasu kiyishter.
We're speaking woe against those who are planning out their evil. Right? Choshvei aven means that they don't only perform evil as it comes; they plan it. Why? For the worst reason of all. What's that? Kiyish le'el yadam. Who am I quoting? Why do they do it? For the worst reason of all, because I could. Who said that?
Bill Clinton
explaining what he did with some interns. Anyway, Kiyesh Le'el Yadam means that you can. So, you know, the Gemara Darshan says this, Matilim Eima Al Atzibur. Because no one stands up to them. Le'yesh le'el yodi is what terminology that Lavan uses. He says, in my power to do harm to you, Yaakov, yesh le'el yodi. So it means that, you know, the Jews who have the power, they just take advantage of their power. Why? Because they can. Okay? So that is what Micha has as his main objection. Micha.